ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय सत्या व्रतम् सत्या परम् त्री सत्यम् सत्यस्य योनिम् निहितम् च सत्ये सत्यस्य सत्यम् अभिथा सत्यम् नेत्रम् सत्यात्मकम् त्वम् शरणम् प्रपन्ना सत्यव्रतम् सत्यपरम् द्विसत्यम् सत्यस्य योनिम् निहितम् च सत्ये सत्यस्य सत्यम् मृतसत्यनेत्रम् सत्यात्मकम् त्वम् शरणम् प्रपन्ना सत्यव्रतम् सत्यपरम् त्रिसत्यम् सत्यस्य योनिम् निहितम् च सत्ये सत्यस्य सत्यम् मृतसत्यनेत्रम् सत्यात्मकम् त्वम् शरणम् प्रपन्ना सत्यव्रतम् सत्यपरम् त्रिसत्यम् सत्यस्य योनिम् निहितम् च सत्ये सत्यस्य सत्यम् मृतसत्यनेत्रम् सत्यात्मकम् त्वम् शरणम् प्रपन्ना Satyavratam, the personality of Godhead, who never deviates from his vow. And a note says that the Lord vows Yadahi Rahi Dhammasya, Vanyar Bhavati Bharata, Abhukhyanam, Atharmasya, Taratmanam, Sri Jambaham, Bhagavad Gita 4.7. To honor his vow, the Lord has appeared. Satyaparam, who is the absolute truth, as stated in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Satyam Param Dhimahi. Hari Satyam, he is always present as the absolute truth before the creation of this cosmic manifestation, during its maintenance. And even after its annihilation. Satyasya, of all relative truths, which are emanations from the absolute truth, Krishna. Yonim, the cause. Nihitam, entered. And then the footnote, the Lord enters everything, even the atom. Andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam, Rama Samhita 544. Therefore he is called Antaryami, the inner force. Cha, and satye, in the factors that create this material world, namely the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Satyasya, of all that is accepted as the truth. Satyam, the Lord is the original truth. Rita Satyanetram, he is the origin of whatever truth is pleasing. sunetram. Satya-atmakam. Everything pertaining to the Lord is truth. Satchidananda. His body is truth. His knowledge is truth. And his pleasure is truth. Tvam, unto you. Unto you, O Lord. Sharanam, offering our full surrender. Prapannaha, we are completely under your protection. Translation. The demigods pray, O Lord, you never deviate from your vow, which is always perfect, because whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone. Being present in the three phases of cosmic manifestation, creation, maintenance, and annihilation, you are the supreme truth. Indeed, unless one is completely truthful, one cannot achieve your faithful favor, which therefore cannot be achieved by hypocrites. You are the active principle, the real truth, in all the ingredients of creation, and therefore you are known as Antayami, the inner force. You are equal to everyone, and your instructions apply for everyone, for all time. You are the beginning of all truth, therefore offering your obeisances. Offering our obeisances, we surrender unto you. Kindly give us protection. Purport. The demigods or devotees know perfectly well that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the true substance, whether within the material world or in the spiritual world. Srimad Bhagavatam begins, therefore, with the words Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Satyam Param Dhimahi. Vasudeva Krishna is the Param Satyam, the Supreme Truth. The Supreme Truth can be approached or understood by the Supreme Method, as declared by the Supreme Truth. Bhaktyamam Abhijanati Yavan Yaschasmi Tattvataha. Bhagavad Gita 18:55. Bhakti, devotional service, is the only way to understand the Absolute Truth. For protection, therefore, the demigods surrender to the Supreme Truth, not to the relative truth. There are persons who worship various demigods, but the Supreme Truth, Krishna, declares in Bhagavad Gita 7:23, Antavattu phalam tesham tat bhavat yalpamedasham. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and the fruits are limited and temporary. Worship the demigods may be useful for a limited time, but the result is antavat, perishable. This material world is impermanent. The demigods are impermanent, and the benedictions derived from the demigods are also impermanent. Whereas the living entity is eternal, nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam. Every living entity, therefore, must search for eternal happiness, not temporary happiness. The words satyam param dhimahi indicate that one should search for the absolute truth, not the relative truth. While offering prayers for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the Srimadeva, Prahlad Maharaj said, Balasya neha sharanam pitarau nasimha nartasya charagam udhanvati marjato nao. Generally, it is understood that the protectors for a child are his parents, but this is not actually a fact. The real protector is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Taptasya tat parivitur ya ihan jase se shas sheshtas tavad viho tanu vritam tvad upekshitanam. Bhagavatam 7:9-19. If neglected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a child, despite the presence of his parents, will suffer, and a diseased person, despite all medical help, will die. In this material world, there is a struggle for existence. Men have invented many means for protection, but these are useless if the Supreme Personality of Godhead rejects them. Therefore, the demigods purposely say, Satyatmakam tvam sharanam apana. Real protection can be obtained from you, O Lord, and therefore we surrender unto you. So that's the first paragraph after out of the MD. 5-page performance. We'll start here. So this shelter then becomes very important for the living entity. Because shelter then means there is some consistency, there's some steadiness. The living entity needs that. The Lord doesn't. He's independent. So he doesn't need shelter. He is shelter. Right? He is existence. But the living entities, being energy, they need shelter. Because energy, unless it has a connection to its source, then ceases to exist. So then the source of all this, the source of energy, then is Krishna. And so being connected to that source, then one is sheltered. So this is the, so the principle is therefore every living entity must have shelter. Without it, they can't function. They feel disturbed. So Krishna, he is the ultimate shelter. So if one is able to connect oneself to Krishna, have that faith that Krishna is actually the shelter, then one becomes peaceful. One actually then becomes situated on the transcendental platform. This is actually the difference between someone who's transcendentally situated and one who's not. It's where your shelter lies. If the shelter is in the material facilities and arrangements, relationships, paraphernalia, all these things, then one will be materially tinged. Because one has faith in those, so one connects oneself to those things. So being in touch with matter, then one becomes like matter. So one becomes materialistic. But if the shelter is Krishna, then one doesn't have this problem, because then Krishna is our shelter, Krishna is our association. So therefore, one becomes transcendental. So this is actually the difference between those who are spiritual, material, is where their shelter lies, where they surrender to. One surrenders to Krishna, then one gains that spiritual position. And if one doesn't surrender to Krishna, then one remains in the material position. And the material position is always temporary. Because whatever we connect ourselves to, also being energy, then it's always flickering, right? Energy flickers, right? I mean, we can see that. You have current or electricity, and what it's coming from is fixed. The cloud is sitting in one place. The lightning moves, or you have, a place of electricity, electrodes. They are fixed. The electricity moves. So if we connect ourselves to the material energy, it's always moving. So then the difficulty comes is that our shelter will also constantly be moving. So there is actually no such thing as shelter in the material world. It will always move on you. Whatever you find as shelter, it will always shift. Therefore, we then connect ourselves to the spiritual, to the transcendental. That doesn't shift, because Krishna doesn't move. Right? He is immovable, so therefore he is always there, he's always steady. So the demigods, though they are the ones that give all the material benedictions to everyone, they give all the blessings to everyone, provide all the facility, create all the situations, give whatever there is material that you receive, it is being arranged, administratively by the demigods. There's nothing. You want to blink, you want to move your finger, scratch your head. That's only because demigods are, allowing you to do it. They're in charge of all those things. There's a demigod in charge of your finger, in charge of each knuckle, in charge of each muscle, each tendon, like that. And because they allow, it's done. But now, those persons, anything, your money, your house, your facilities, your vehicles, your clothes, demigods are in charge of all of that. That's why there's 33 million of them, right? To take care of everything that you deal with in a day, It takes 33 million administrators in the universe to organize it. Right? So now, those persons, they take shelter of the Supreme Lord. Right? Because they know that all of this stuff doesn't mean anything. Right? Generally, you'll find, you talk to someone who deals in a particular field, and they're very much into it, they're expert at it, or masters of that field. Then you, if you talk to them, then you find out the real story about what the field they're talking about. Right? You talk to other persons, other experts, other people dabbling, you know, enthusiasts, you know, those who are interested, and they somehow know they have an idea that this field is very, very important. Those who are masters in the field, then they understand it doesn't have the same importance that people put to it. Right? You may have so many things, this, that. You know, the commercial says, get this, you'll be happy, or you'll be safe, or you'll be protected, or this and that. But the person that actually knows the thing knows that, well, you know, in most cases it kind of works, but, you know, there also is plenty of evidence that it doesn't. So these demigods, they deal in this field. It is their field. They know the field. And they take shelter of the Supreme Lord. Right? So, therefore, from that, then we should understand is that we should also then take shelter of the Supreme Lord. Anything less than that won't really give us the satisfaction we're looking for. We will not be satisfied. We can't be satisfied. Right? So, someone may say, so, okay, that's nice, it's a great philosophy, it sounds reasonable, very logical, but now, you know, we have our practical day-to-day life, you know, we have all these things, we have bills to pay, you know, people to go, people to see, all these different things. What about this? I mean, that's not real, this is not substance. So the point is how much is connected to Krishna, it becomes substance. It's not connected to Krishna. No, it is not any substance. You can get all the money you want, you still will be frustrated. You have no money, you want some money. You get some money, you want more money. You want more money, you have it. We've heard this a million times. This is the reality. It's not just some cute thing that Prabhupada, you know, said and it sounds great. This is reality. Right? It's reality. That's the way it is. So whatever you endeavor for, it lets you down. Means that is the purpose of history. Is what has happened to other people in different situations, whatever they're doing. Okay, they were pious, what happened to them? They were impious, what happened to them? They were devotional, what happened to them? That's the purpose. It's not just facts and figures that, you know, kids are supposed to fill their heads with, and then if they fill their heads with all these things, then everybody says, oh, they're so nicely educated. Like that, and, oh, you mean you didn't learn about 1066, the Battle of Hastings? You know, your life is useless. You know? So, no, that's useless. Who cares about 1066? It's gone. Who cares about the Battle of Hastings? Who cares about any of those people that were there? Nobody nowadays does. So you shouldn't be worried that if you don't know, you've missed out on something. But now, what was the mood of those people? What were their endeavors? What was the result of those endeavors? That is something that one could study. But one doesn't specifically have to study that. You can study any time somebody's avaricious wants to gain something. What are their methods? Like that. So then, these things are there. But the principle is that whatever has happened in the past is happening today. It will happen tomorrow. Right? There's nothing special, there's nothing new, there's nothing special or new about our material existence. A particular nose that we've had, plenty of people have it, Millions of people have had it in the past. What's going to happen in the future? There's only so many noses, so many ears, so many eyes, right? So many clothes, so many ornaments. They've all been had, are had, and will be had. So there's nothing special, unique. How we talk, it may be unique in our circle. Plenty of people talk like that, have talked, will talk. Right? You have 8,400,000 options. So that gives you, you know, that many situations. That's it. And maybe a lot, but still that's it. So then we can see is that all these things people have taken shelter of, people have become absorbed in, people have made their lives about them, created crusades about them, developed issues, written papers, signed petitions, you know. But it has been, where are they now? What happened to them? Did they go back to Godhead? And if they didn't, what was the benefit? The man is working so hard to pay all the bills, do all the different things, to raise his children, make everything wonderful, then he dies. Then who takes care? What was the use of all this taking care? Right? One may say, oh, they benefited, but then they die. And then they have to start all over again, right? Right. No one's learned their ABCs before. No one's learned to count from 1 to 10 before. This is the first time it's ever happened. Or it's the first time it's happened for anybody. Every lifetime, everybody learns their alphabet, learns to speak, learns to count. They learn everything. So that means it's been taught, and then it disappears. When you die, it's finished. Then you start all over again as if you've never seen it or heard of it before. So therefore, what is of benefit is its connection to Krishna. If one understands its connection to Krishna, the family's connection, the money's connection, the education's connection, one's clothes connection, you know, one's toenails, one's nose, whatever it is, if one can connect it to Krishna, then one gets some benefit from it that lasts you. That will give you shelter. But if not, we shouldn't be under illusion that there's anything here in this world that's going to give us shelter, especially when the people that run this place, the material world, Brahma and Shiva, that's who's being talked about here, right? They don't put any credence that there's going to be any shelter here at all. And they run the place, right? You know, you could imagine that, right? There's a big calamity. And everybody goes down to, you know, some place, a bomb shelter or something. And the people who manage the bomb shelter, you see them going somewhere else. And then you're going to say, oh, where are you going? Oh man, I'm in the bomb shelter, and they cave in. You may, you know, die of asphyxiation, you're starved to death. Something will happen here. We're going to this other, we're going to the Bahamas, you know. Like that. So then what would you do? You would think, oh, no, they don't know what they're talking about. I'll just stay right here. No, you'd think, oh, okay, so maybe I should be going there also. So the same thing is we take shelter of the material world. But those who run the material world don't. They take shelter of Krishna. Because of that, then their lives have some meaning. Brahma feels his life has some meaning because he's managing on Krishna's behalf. Right. Shiva, he feels that there's some meaning to his life because he's doing his duties to please Krishna. Then there's some meaning. Otherwise, creating another universe, filling it up with all kinds of populace, having them do all their eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, you know, birth, death, old age, and disease, what's so special? Right? There's unlimited universes. It's been going on for unlimited time. What does it matter? One more creation. Right? Because it's Krishna's arrangement. It's Krishna's method. Therefore, Brahma takes shelter of that. He doesn't take shelter of his lotus stem or his Satyaloka or, you know, all, no. He takes shelter of Krishna. Shiva also. You know, his tree is not giving him his shelter. He sits under his tree and meditates on Krishna. And his duties he does it to please Krishna. Therefore, he is satisfied. We see Yudhishthir. It's not that being emperor of the world gives him some satisfaction or some shelter. He feels just as sheltered as Indraprastha with the world, unrivaled world, sitting at his feet, or sitting in the forest with nothing. Why? Because he's just serving Krishna. That's the principle. So whether you have much or little, it doesn't matter. It's the quality of connecting it to Krishna. Then it becomes wonderful. Otherwise it doesn't, it has no meaning. It doesn't have any purpose. So this should be cultivated, this kind of understanding, because then that surrender to Krishna, that is important. A devotional service surrendered to Krishna is, you know, of essential essence. And seeing that Krishna will protect us, maintain us, that is the essence of surrender. That's the meaning of surrender. Okay, I surrender to Krishna, but I'm maintaining myself because of my endeavor, because of my results, my facilities, my arrangements. So there's some surrender, but it's not complete. But when you see it is by Krishna's grace we have some abilities, by Krishna's grace we're able to apply them, by Krishna's grace we're getting some results, and by Krishna's grace we're able to engage those results in his service, then this becomes useful. This is then surrender. We see Yudhishthira when he found out that Krishna had left, then that's his point that he made, that, you know, everything that we have is all by Krishna's grace. You know, our kingdom, you know, our family relationships, our weapons, our prowess, our reputation, our wealth, whatever we have is because of Krishna. Without Krishna, no meaning. So, and we see he's the best of all we read about, all the kings and that. So his example then is to be understood, followed. Parikshit Maharaj also, as king, his duty is to maintain things so that people will become Krishna conscious. So he has all facility, his royal dress, his crown, his sword, his everything. But when he finds that, okay, he only has a week to live, so therefore, running the kingdom is not his business now. You know, now his business is to surrender to Krishna. So then he gives it all up. Because the principle is surrender to Krishna. So he surrenders through doing his service of managing the kingdom, or he surrenders through his service of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. So the constant principle in anything is that surrender to the Lord. The constant principle is the Lord as the shelter. So any questions or comments or questions?
What is the situation of the devotee, of the aspiring devotee? In his heart he's trying to surrender and he wants to become pure, but he also finds himself governed by so many contaminations and impurities in the heart. Is he under the shelter of Krishna or Maya or
that? So the question is that somebody wants to surrender to Krishna, but they find it within the heart with so many material desires and that, and because of these, then it has a major, prominence in one's life. And so is one under the shelter of Krishna or under the shelter of Maya? If one understands that the ultimate connection of all these is Krishna, then we're under Krishna's shelter. Though the shelter is stable, but our connection to it may be weakened by maintenance of these material desires. But Krishna is always there. Like that. That's the principle. So then one has to analyze. So one that one can recognize, see, many don't recognize, means their material attachments they take as normal. But they don't think of what normal means. Normal means for someone who is connected to the material world. And that normality is not exclusive to human beings. You know, it's every living entity has the same desires and same experience. There's no difference. The dog is eating something in the street and the man is, you know, sitting in the fanciest restaurant that doesn't even have, you know, how you say, the prices on the menu. But the experience is the same. There isn't any difference. There's a, for false ego, then we create differences so that therefore then the human doesn't act as a dog. But that's the, it's only for the purpose of elevation. Otherwise, the sensual experience they get and the satisfaction of the mind is the same. In fact, for the dog, it means even if there's something wrong with it, it doesn't quite have enough salt or, you know, there's something there, he'll be satisfied. So you might even say the dog enjoys more. But these kind of points aren't brought out to the serious materialist because then he'll try to be a dog. So therefore, being a dog is considered, you know, lesser than being a human. So the real thing is that we have a tendency because of our false ego. One is the false egos were gods, so therefore after that any manifestation of false ego is pretty minor. So therefore to consider ourselves special and unique of, you know, all living entities in the universe is a natural consequence. If you can be God, then definitely you're something special. So then, so then the idea is that if we've connected, therefore we consider these things normal. So this means that one is not contemplative. This is the symptom, though there may be great intelligence on one platform, this person is actually ignorant. This was mentioned by Sanatana Goswami, is that even though he's an expert in Sanskrit, he's a scholar in Persian, he knows all the branches of Vedic knowledge. Everybody says he's a great pandit, but actually he's a fool because he doesn't know who he is or what the purpose of his life is. So, you know, so therefore one has to be careful to become introspective and not be afraid of introspection. Generally because of ego, we're afraid of introspection because if we become introspective, generally we're not overly pleased with what we see. Maybe if this was Satyayuga, we might be a little more pleased. But since this is Kali Yuga, generally the samskaras that we have are not so pleasing. So they create all kinds of, things in the heart. So then if one can observe that they're there, that's the first symptom of, second symptom. The first is that we want to know. Then this is a symptom of intelligence. You know, actual practical intelligence. Other intelligence is not necessarily so practical. Because practical means what gives you long-term solution, right? Like that. Like if we say, okay, we can give you one grain of rice this second, but then you don't get lunch. Right? Or you have to wait 3 hours till lunch, and then you get a full meal. So, which person would you consider intelligent? The one that takes the grain of rice now and then starves later, or the one who waits, starves now, and eats later? Right? So therefore, because we take ourselves and our particular material identity as all in all, therefore what's connected in makes this life prosperous, we consider it important. But what will make future eternity, that becomes second place. So therefore, we can understand by applying the same logic that this is less intelligent. So basically, the ego is our main problem. By the ego, we think we're God, we're the controller, we're the enjoyer. If we can't control, we can't enjoy, then something's wrong somewhere. And it's not us. But if we become introspective, then we find out that all the problem, not even, you know, a portion of a percent, is due to anyone else. It's all due to ourselves. So that's very hard for the false ego to digest. Because if a false ego would rather discuss justice, you know, my endeavor, I did everything right, why is it things are going different? I did everything perfect, as if we are the doer and the controller and the one who establishes what will be the results of everything that happens. So with that premise, then, you know, we'd much rather busy ourselves discussing about everybody else's faults and problems. So then the tendency is we don't want to look into our own heart and see that the reason we're suffering is because of what's going on in the heart. Right? Because suffering and enjoyment comes from the heart anyway. You like it, you call it pleasure. You don't like it, you call it suffering. And the person next to you could be having exactly the opposite experience. Right? Exactly the opposite experience. So that's it's all in the mind. That's the difficulty. And because we identify, because the false ego, with the mind, and with the particular items of pleasure and pain that the mind has identified, then we suffer and enjoy. So when we look at it and start to see that this is absurd, and it's not a stable platform, and we have that understanding, then right there, immediately, serious advancement starts. Means that it's like, then we recognize that there is an anchor, right? It probably tells the story, they're rowing the boat all night. Right? And in the morning, it's like, you know, nothing's wrong. We rode the boat. You know, why we didn't get anywhere. Right? So the intelligent person goes, okay, I'm rowing, I'm chanting, I'm doing everything. Why am I getting anywhere? So then the natural thing is to look around for something that's keeping you from moving forward. Right? So then those anchors are material desires. So as soon as we identify them, understand that they understand they're not good, right? Then, right there, that's already started the process. Then we start moving forward quickly. Right? So this is the difference actually between the Madhyamadikari and the Kanista. The Madhyama can be introspective, and the Kanista generally tries to avoid it, because the Kanista figures they're already okay, and their material desires are perfectly fine and normal, and don't bother them, you're a fanatic. While the Madhyama understands I'm a rat bag and all my problems are coming from myself, not from one other person. They're the instrument, yes, but they're not the cause of it. I'm the cause of it. And ultimately, it's because I've forgotten Krishna. I think I'm the Lord and Master, and if things don't go the way I want them, then I suffer. And if they do, then I'm happy. This is the problem. Right? So then, because from the Madhyam platform, advancement is dynamic. In the Kanista platform, it's very slow, because so much burden is there to drag along. But in the Madhyama, you recognize what the burden, and it starts to disappear. This is what Prabhupada calls the clearing stage in the chanting. Clearing means then, Vishwanath gives the example of leaves blowing away in a storm, right? There's tons of leaves, but they really blow away. They go quickly, you know. So like that, then that's important that we can see that. Then the next step is all right, since I have them, and it's going to take a little time for the habit to go away. So then, how to properly see these attachments in connection to Krishna? Right? Because there isn't an attachment that's there that Krishna hasn't given some connection for. So if we're actually serious, then we will find what that connection is. Because it's there, everything. One's eating, one's sleeping, one's mating, one's defending. And then all the facilities you need to do that, Krishna's already given connections for them. It's just a matter of whether we want to connect them. Of course, they lose some of their mystique, they lose some of their mundane excitement, you know, when we do connect it. Anything that's supposed to be done loses its excitement. And that's the process. Right? Do it according to how Krishna wants, it loses its excitement, so you lose your interest. Then you can give it up. That's the path of renunciation. Right? It's to take. So Krishna, this is what's so unique about the devotional process. In previous ages, then you have the path of karma, or of attachment, and the path of jnana, which is renunciation. But the devotional path is yukta vairagya. Means you take your karma, your material attachments, and with knowledge engage them in Krishna's service. So that creates detachment. So through the path of attachment, you actually become detached. So this you don't find anywhere else. This is the uniqueness of it. So that has to be followed. If devotees recognize this and practice it, they'll get good result. If they resist it and ignore it, they won't get anywhere. It's that simple. It's a science, and science works scientifically. So if devotees take it, apply it, then they'll get wonderful results. Therefore, the histories, who applied it, they got wonderful results. Who didn't apply it, they lost. Right? Gopal Chapala, right? High birth, beautiful. You know? I mean, to look at him, he was beautiful. Like that. Educated, well placed. He was the, you know, he was the counselor advisor for Raghunath Das Goswami's uncle and father. And they were billionaires. So you can't get a better situation, you can't get a more secure situation than that, a more materially perfect situation than that, right? Of humans, he's a Brahmin, of that, he's educated, you know, materially, he's working for the richest people that there are, basically, like that. Physically, he's beautiful, you know, so everything's, all the aspects of karma, he's got it. But because of his pride and his attitude, he lost every bit of it. No one cared for his brahminicalness. He got leprosy. He lost his beauty. He was fired from his job. You know, so he lost everything. He went from the most pious situation to the most impious. Simply because he didn't want to recognize the potency of the devotional process. And he chose to express this, to do it through the medium of Vaishnava Parampara. So, it doesn't leave you a whole lot. Devotional service is the only thing of value, and the association of devotees is the only situation of value. And he ignored both of those, being proud of his material situation. You know, his birth, his knowledge, his position. And he lost everything. So that's what history's for. Yudhishthir, we see, he takes shelter of the Lord, he gets everything. And even if he doesn't have everything, he's still perfectly satisfied and everything works for him. Right? One could say, well, everything didn't work for him, but everything went nice. But he always had good situations. You know, it's just how far you look at something. what's a good situation or not, it depends upon your vision. Right? It happens, what's happened this second, is that good or bad? You look a little farther, you may see it's good. Right? There was that story that he was involved by the king and his prime minister. I don't remember the details so much, but the main principle was is they went out hunting or something, and the king, in an accident, lost the finger. Right? And so then the king is very upset. You know, he does all his pujas, he does everything perfect, he worships the Lord. How could God let this happen? You know? So he was very disturbed with this and didn't take so seriously his devotional practices, because God didn't maintain his perfect material situation, right? Isn't that what God's supposed to do for everybody? You know, God's supposed to make earth perfect for everybody, that nothing materially goes bad for anybody, right? Isn't that what God's position is? So whatever, God didn't do this, so he was very upset. Prime minister was trying to preach to him, and he got very upset with the minister, and then put him in jail. So just after that, some these kind of low-class people, they worship, you know, all these, you know, how do you say, wild forms of the demigods. So then they found the king, and they caught him, because he was, you know, quite a good-looking person, and was going to offer him to that deity. By, you know, cutting off his head. So then they were just about to cut off his head when somebody noticed that he was missing a finger. And so then they stopped the sacrifice, because you could only offer a completely perfect person, you know, to the deity. Otherwise, it's not a nice offering, right? You won't offer a flower that's missing half the petals. Or something. You know, it has to be a perfect deity. So a perfect human has to be offered in this, you know, sacrifice. So they let him go. And then the king went back, and then he said, you know, he's telling how, you know, he got saved from this and all that. He said, why? Because he didn't have a finger. So then, you know, the discussion came up. So therefore you see, the Lord is protecting you. If you had a finger, you would have been killed. You lost a finger, but you have life. You know? And then the king asked, well, okay, but what about your misfortune? You got thrown in jail. He says, yes, if I hadn't been in jail, they would have come and caught me and sacrificed me. I got all my fingers. Right? So therefore, you have to see a longer term. That's it. And if you take anything material long enough, you see it's got an end, you know. So one has to gauge it in that. Understanding you're going to die, and everything's going to be lost, then you consider what is the importance of my endeavor for anything material. Right? So other than engaging in Krishna service and removing our material desire for those things that we involve ourselves in, there is no purpose if you look at it with that. If you look at it today, yes, it has great importance. But if you look at it in your life, it somehow or other becomes reduced to very, you know. So that's the science. Is that okay? Yeah, question. You have something? No. Okay, last point.
No one will
what's the connection between when you're not in the when you're in the West and you're doing sankirtan, you feel protected, and here one feels afraid. Because how do you say? One is when it's doing sankirtan and one's absorbed in service. So being absorbed in service, then one has the, you know, association of protection of Krishna. And one's not afraid because there's nothing over there to lose anyway. Right? If we do, you know, there's nothing there. But here, this is real, so there's something to lose here. You know? And then one's out of sankirtan, one's dealing with those who don't understand their devotees, you know, so then the intensity of interaction is very mild. But in the dham, then you're dealing with devotees. You know, everything here is devotees. You know, the plants, the tree, everything is. So then one has to be much more careful, so the intensity is much greater. Also, whatever you do in the West, it takes very slow for things to happen, very slow for things to unhappen. While here, the rate at which things can go up or down is very, very fast. Okay. What would take years to correct something in the West can be corrected in a moment here. You know, like that. You know, so it's a different place, the intensity is. So then we'll continue. Rantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srimad Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayatai Gaurava Prema Rindu.